I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room. Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed in the rent room. We let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. Welcome to the Rant Room.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest. You guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room. We keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep what, everybody?
Wakanda.
Now, see,
I like
Wakanda.
We just started doing that too.
Okay, so, Wakanda.
Like, no, okay. People keep stealing our catchphrases. So we're
we keep
Wakanda
coming up with these phrases.
Keep switching them up. We got to keep them on their toes, baby. Yeah.
We got at least till February, March.
You always
got to
keep it wavy, you know. Yeah, and so, please.
Well, let's go last till
February. I'm taking the month off.
Right.
I'm going on vacation in February. It's black Wakanda out. It is blackety black.
See it every
blackety Wakanda black. Out. Everything. Yes. Black all day, everything. Answer the phone. Wakanda. Go to McDonald's. Would you like number five? I like a Wakanda, a number five.
Actually. Yeah, we got. We got till February, then we got to come
right.
Some new.
Yeah, coming up Black History Month.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. All right. So y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. On the show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture. But our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. So you hear her voice,
mm-hmm.
Little Miss Interruption. Lisa Bolakaja.
Yes.
The street nerdist herself.
Yes.
What's going down, Lisa?
Cool. Hey, shout out to one of the homies on the Fan Brothers show who just got hired for American Gods.
All right, cool, yeah.
So you go on the timeline and see who it is. So
why are you trying to keep it all hush?
She gave him a shout out with no name, though.
Like, Good band. Hey, shout out. You know, that's exciting. Because it's like one of the people that you follow for a while who are into fandom that do all kinds of amazing stuff. And for them to get on a TV show of that caliber is awesome. So shout out to them. A lot of people doing a lot of amazing stuff. And shout out to all the black women out there who are changing up what pulp culture is in terms of talking about it, writing about it, and being the influencers and the brothers that are backing us up.
Because you ain't got the black girls behind you on the internet, you fucked up.
Listen, listen. And sisters are the culture bearers anyway. So it's like when the sisters are running with you, like anything, especially like in hip hop culture, people are always talking about, well, how come certain people don't make it in hip hop? If black women ain't behind you, you not gonna make it, bruh. I don't care if you was a white rapper, a Latino rapper, I don't care. And once the sisters get that stamp of approval, brothers come through. Right. Like, hey, all right, well. Here we go. So just want to recognize.
What you got to say about that?
Got to recognize.
Oh, I agree. I don't want no problems.
You know, shout out
love
to them.
My sisters.
A lot of them who are writing, a lot of them are doing a lot of the writing in terms of film review, right. Who are having a huge impact on that in terms of
the black girl nerds.
Oh my
shout
god
out to y'all.
Black girl nerds are like they're killing it because there's so many people who are listening to what we have to say and all the fans and all of that. So shout out to everybody who's in the clique who enjoy being nerds and geeks who love film, who love TV, and who support those actors and actresses that are doing all the things. So, and shout out to Issa Rae. I know it's been a couple of weeks since the Emmys and stuff. Who was
boy,
real?
I'm regretting
listen,
not having her on before
listen,
she came being in.
I've been trying to tell you. I said you got to snatch a sister up.
She kept saying I keep coming. I'm like, well, let me squeeze
you
her
know,
around
you,
this time.
You see, if you would have told, I would have picked her up myself.
Now she's like, Hilliard, who?
That's on you.
Like that's
on you. But shout out to Issa who kept it real when she said, "Who are you rooting for at the Emmys?" And she saw all the black
all
people.
The black people.
And you know what? Yes honey, say that.
Big shout out to Lena Waithe for winning. That's our girl.
Yes,
she's my co-chair on at the Black Committee, the Writers Guild,
and Sterling Brown for winning.
Sterling Brown.
The last time I seen a brother win that was Andre Brower way back for Homicide: Life in the Streets. That's like 19-20 years
ago.
Well,
he won last year, didn't he?
Yeah, it's back to back.
But
it was something different.
Like it was the best actor in the miniseries.
Right. But for this and a series, best actor.
See, I was talking with Scott about the OJ thing. He was we were talking when he was filming it, and he kept saying to me, he was like, watch Sterling Brown. watch, he's gonna be a force. He's gonna be a force. And then, you know, the show came out, and then
I thought I heard somebody say that about Alan Maldonado.
I mean, that's the rumor was going on. That's what people tell. We can start the rumor here.
You have a superstar type name, because the name, your name just rolls. Alan Maldonado. It just sounds like that's like movie marquee.
I appreciate it.
You know, on the theater,
and the Oscar goes to. Once people get it right,
like I've been McDonald, really? I've been McEl, like I've been Mick. I don't know what is. I've been Irish several
black
times.
Irish.
But how did they get that?
It ain't
USA?
A C nowhere near my name. Right, but right. hey, people, just you know, I don't know what it is.
Well, they assume. Mm-hmm.
You can't put your fingers on it. It makes no sense. Right, it makes no sense. But hey. I get mad.
You know what? They're lazy and don't care. That's why.
Say that.
Very true. Very
a lot
true.
Of people call me Hillard. And I'm like, see, that's ghetto laziness. It's Hilliard. Or Hilliard. Something. Fucking.
Because it was Hillard. It would be spelled Hillard. Or something like that. Yeah.
Nothing's up.
No, I get it.
What's up, Chris? Welcome to the show.
Hi, people.
Chris Derrick from the Derrick Brothers Riding Directing Team. What's going on, dog?
Working.
Yeah.
Slaving.
Working for the man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm just trying to I finally got to do my rewrites on the script today. Huh? So after this month, whatever.
Sounds so excited.
Did you get anything out of the scene that you wanted to change or add or subtract or anything?
No.
I have one thing for you, but I'll talk to you about it later. It's minor. It still was my favorite thing.
Listen, when the movie gets made.
Can I be one of the background people?
All right, so I wrote this movie. It's about Orson Welles, and then there's a scene when that was in the black scene was when he starts his love affair with Eartha Kitt,
mm-hmm.
and it starts off in this jazz club in Paris where Duke Ellington's playing with his band, and she's singing on the stage, and mm-hmm. Orson comes in and sits down, and he's like, oh, because he knows Duke from when they were on Broadway like 10 years earlier.
Right.
And then Duke's like, oh, there's this woman I want you to meet. Come sit down. And then it's Eartha Kitt, and they, you know, like then go out and spend the whole night together walking through Paris having this discussion about, you know, he played Othello in his movie, which mm-hmm. he was trying to make it to still at the time, in blackface. She kind of like...
She goes in on him.
Right. Like, played him in blackface. And he's like, well... It was Raw Sienna more than
right.
That could be a whole movie by itself. The whole day with them walking through the city and just
so right. Mm-hmm. So that was the scene, and I've been trying to do. I've been wanting to do rewrites on the script since Labor Day. So now I finally have today to knock out three scenes is my plan today.
Okay,
but that's what I'm working on. Mm.
Right,
because I had a great time just hearing it, you know, the guys, the chemistry was good. What's her name, Keandra?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I thought David really kind of nailed that accent.
What was cool, what he did, what I really liked, was his like, and it was cool because I was trying to do this in the script, and he like kind of picked up on it.
Right.
Is that, you know, Orson Welles is such a very specific way of speaking,
right,
particularly when he's like giving talk, you know, like these radio interviews, and part of the conceit of the movie is it's told as a radio drama, like he's telling his own story.
Mm.
So there's voiceover to like bring you around.
Okay.
And I wanted the voiceover to sound like this very, you know, like smart and person.
Right.
And then the rest of the time he's just surrounded by people. He's not always trying to like speak with the big words and stuff like that. And he was able to like gave that the voiceover had a different tone.
Right.
I mean, he's written differently, but he spoke it differently, which I really liked.
Right.
And then he was a little different when he
did you present?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And it was good. I really liked that. Mm-hmm. It was good.
Well, that's good, man. So welcome to the show, my man.
Thank you.
So y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. If you guys are grown, let's go ahead and get it in. Mm-hmm. So today we got my man on here, the OG actor himself, the pimp dog.
Oh, shit. Talk that talk. He is walk in that walk.
You know,
talk
he is about, in the new talk OG.
Talk that talk. Walk that
speak
walk.
Speak on it. Speak on it.
You know, the rapper himself. He said he got bars, too. He said he got bars.
Oh, he got bars. All right. All right.
I'm going to put them all up on the
board. Okay. You all out there. You know what I mean? People going to be tweeting, yo, I got bars.
He called out a couple people. He called out Lil Wayne.
Oh, damn it. Lil Wayne ain't got no problems, Wayne. Ain't got no problems,
I'm fucking with you. Yeah, yeah. Alan Maldonado, you guys. What's up, man? Welcome to the show, man. We appreciate
it. Hey, man. I'm glad to be here, yeah, man. Glad to wrap it up and rant with y'all. What's going
well, thank
on?
Thank you for spending a little bit of your Sunday with us.
Hey, no problem. Mm-hmm. No problem. No problem.
Football day and all
see,
that
see, you
shit.
Got me. You got me now. You know what I'm saying? See, you didn't wait like Issa.
Exactly.
You didn't wait like, didn't wait like Issa. You know what I mean? I'm going to slid in real quick.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. So let's go back a little bit. Tell the kids where you're from, how you got into the game.
Okay. What's up, everybody? From Rialto, California. Right. It's like 60 miles east of Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Compton in my early years, like for about 7.
Really?
And then we moved because of the violence or whatever. Mm-hmm. Literally, my neighbor literally got killed.
Really?
It was a home invasion. Right, it was a home invasion. Wow. You know, so my mom's like, we're not going to do this here. But the crazy thing about it is that everybody had the same idea.
Right.
So wow. Compton just went to Rialto. That's right, basically right. That's basically what it was.
Like my neighborhood moved from the Bay, from Palo Alto, which is where like Dangerous Minds took place.
Yeah,
to Stockton. Everybody moved to Stockton or Richmond. Or
yeah, everybody had the same idea. Right. So like, you know, I was supposed to be getting away from all the gang violence and, you know, 4 houses down, and, you know.
Crips right down
Crips
the street.
Right down the street. So it was like, you know.
Little Ray Ray.
You got an A for effort, though. Right. A for effort. But yeah, you know, grew up out there, Rialto. Didn't really even know what I wanted to do till I was about like 17. I was in dibbling and dabbling acting or whatever. And, you know, I always tell a story because it was, I remember the day that changed my life was. In short, I was outside with the, you know, with the fellas. They all smoking, drinking. You know, I'm out there chilling.
You didn't have that, no. You were just there.
Yeah, you know, I don't drink or smoke. So, I mean, that was that even back then. Even back then, even surrounded by it. I just never entertained me. Never really, I was never drawn to it.
Right, right.
Like, let's do that. But so, I saw this lady walking down the alley, and I just couldn't take my eyes off of her. And I like, literally, everyone around me kind of disappeared.
Right,
and I was like, okay. And, just couldn't keep my eyes open. And she got closer. It was my mother. And it like broke my heart because I've never seen my mother. Let me tell you how the magic of a black woman. I didn't know we was broke until I was 17.
Until you were 17.
I didn't know we was broke. Like the way she played it, the way she like
she took care
manipulated the situation. Right. I always thought we saving. Like it was just the weirdest shit. Like I'm thinking about it now.
You know
like
what it is?
Like that's how that, dumb the how was I? Like you know I'm not believing this shit.
That's that church building fund.
Okay.
Yeah, like oh we say we went from a house, then we went to a townhouse, then we in the projects. I'm like, oh no, we saving. We saving, we good. We good. Like you know, I didn't really, you know, dissect it just because she knew me because, you know, since I was young, I've always been like a businessman. Like I would call her when I was 3 years old and tell her I made her bed up, so she owed me $3.
Yes,
you know what I'm saying? Like, so I've been, you know, I've been a hustler my entire life.
Money, so
yeah, I made your bed, so you owe me $3. They like she told me to do it. I just like this is my fee. Yeah, that's exactly what it was. So, in knowing me, she always knew that if I knew that we were broke, I probably would have quit school. I probably would have been selling drugs. I probably be doing all types
working
of
working at McDonald's, some shit.
Doing something. McDonald's probably wouldn't cut it. I probably would have with the homies out there selling them things. Yeah. But yeah, from that moment, I realized that I want to do something and be able to provide my family and not get caught up in the street life and. That's when I began acting and then really kind of just put everything, all my, you know, birds in one basket and just kept going.
Go ahead. Let me ask you a question. So how did you think, I mean, like, what was the acting thing that, like, there was a role or something that you said, I want to try this? There had to have been.
It was my senior year in high school was I got in the theater. Mm-hmm. I got in the theater, and I began writing. I began, like, doing different skits, and it just really, I played basketball my high school, and by my senior year, I realized they don't teach height. So it was only so far I could go.
Right. I thought you were 6 foot.
Man, you know, in another life, so basketball taught me, you know, the whole ballless life. That's right. me. Right. Everything kind of reverts back to anything basketball. Like anything, like my nieces, my nephew, or anybody on the street. Like, you know, in life, you just pick and roll.
Right.
like that's always my analogy goes to basketball.
Sometimes you got a free throw.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to know your players. Right. As a coach, everybody, you know, it's just different things like that. But basketball was really what my first obsession, because I do have an obsessive bit, you know, personality. And ninth grade, I started playing, didn't know how to play, was on the bottom of the bench. By the time my senior year happened, I became the sixth man off the bench, one of the best shooters on the team, and really learned that if you work hard at something and if you're not skilled at it, you can still be good at it if you have put an extreme amount of work ethic in it. Then acting was the thing that I realized my senior year was like, oh, this is my gift. This is what comes easy to me, because I did something that came hard to me and actually became good at it. So I really just transferred that energy into acting and was like, well, if I put this same amount of energy into something that I'm actually naturally gifted at, what can be? How great can I be? That was always the question that runs in my head every day. So that's how I got in the game, as far as wanting to act and realizing like this is something that I could be good at. Yeah.
Did you like all of a sudden then after high school go looking for agents and shit and hitting the pavement and auditioning?
Man,
and all
shit,
that?
I ain't know how to do it. I just was like, all right, let me get to LA and figure something out. I got into this acting class. Shout out to Bobby Shaw Chance.
Oh yeah, Bobby.
That's like my second. She birthed me as an actor. I'm talking about this 2000. No X, no other numbers with it. Just 2000. This was 2000. I fell up in a class and just fell in love with what was going on in there. And I saw some phenomenal actors. Some of the best actors I've seen to this day were in that, and they inspired me. And I was like, man, I want to be that. I want to be these guys in here, how they can just hit the stage and just, whether it's laugh, cry at the drop of a hat. Like, I, you know, shout out to my big brother Kiko Ellsworth.
Oh, Kiko, yeah.
Yeah, I remember we doing this exercise, and he starts at the beginning, at the top of the stage. He walks to the back, touches the wall, and comes back, and he's bawling. And I said, okay, I want to do that.
See, to me, that's the thing that I love about directing the most, is that when an actor touches you.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, it's like there's this human emotion is so, like, it's very laser, right? It's boom, hitting you right that hard. That's like when you know, like, someone is really special as an acting talent, because there's all the other stuff that they got to worry about, walking, they got to know their lines, but you know when they can hit you with the emotional power of it, that's when you know this person.
But the emotion isn't always sad, though. The emotion could be happy, could be like a laugh.
I mean, it could be anything. Absolutely be anything, but that's when you know someone's good, you know, as opposed to someone's trying. You know, or you know, like, they're just doing it.
Right.
And just like you said, he, like, stays in back and he's crying.
Yeah, and he's crying. Like, it just hits you, and it affects you, and it moves you. And I think that's where, from every aspect of what we're doing, from the writing to cinematography to the acting, I think all of these points or all of these positions have to have that same effect, have to touch you and inspire in some manner, whether it's, you know, to inspire you to cry, inspire you to laugh. I think that's our job.
It's also about creator. Being connected. He's totally connected with himself.
Yes.
That he has to let himself go.
Yes.
Because what happens in those classes is, I'm a former actor, right? Been writing and directing for years now.
Yeah.
But on the other side of the thing, until you get to that place where you feel like I could walk into an audition and they could tell me to do anything and I can do it, until you get to that place, which is where he was at. It didn't matter what you give him. You could tell him, go touch the wall and come back. I want you to be in tune. He could do it because he was in touch with himself.
Oh, yeah.
He wasn't worried about how do I look about this moment. When you get to that, that's why I love improv actors. because they can mm-hmm. just,
yeah,
you know, move. Yeah. But I love that shit.
Yeah, so, yeah, yeah. It's definitely being right. sharp. And then, like, that individual inspired me. And that's what really drove me to, like, oh, I want to get to that particular level and, right. and be a part of the elite in just this small circle. Right. You know, it started off small. I wasn't right. even thinking about, oh, let me get to where Denzel is at. It was just, let me get to the top of this acting class. let me get here first. Let me just accomplish this right. goal. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I've just been, you know, pushing away and, at the age of 21, I got my first big role, and I was on Young and the Restless.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
See,
I
see.
Pretty hair. I seen.
I know.
Yeah.
Pretty Ricky.
Yeah.
They cut his hair. Are you kidding?
I know. See, that's what I like that you said. I just want to get to the top of the acting class. I don't need to be at Denzel
right.
at the moment, because I think that
took the pressure off himself.
It takes
too.
The pressure, but it's like, but you know, what's the steps? The steps is what. You know, like every career is built on. It's right. like you just can't catapult to mm-hmm. the top of the class. I mean, and some people do, but they don't stay because right. they don't know the steps and they don't know how they got there.
That's a great point. That's right. a great point. I talk about it all the time as far as, you know, especially with my career, I built it brick by brick.
Right.
Like I went from, you know, one line, five and below, right. into co-star, to right. guest star, to reoccurring, to mm-hmm. series regular. Mm-hmm. Like, I've really taken all of the steps. And, again, here's the basketball analogy. Yep. basketball analogy. Some of the best coaches are the players that weren't gifted. Like, Steve Kerr was right. the guy, was the role right. player, because he didn't have the natural ability to skip steps.
Right.
Where Michael Jordan had this gift that he could skip steps.
Right.
That he could
right.
skip steps. So in order to teach others, it's very difficult, because it's like you should be able to jump 8 feet in the air. Like, why can't you do that?
That's why I think that Michael and Magic were not good coaches,
because yes.
they're so gifted, they don't understand
mm-hmm.
what has to happen.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. They skipped a lot of steps. They skipped a lot of steps. And a lot of actors, and I've been in this business for a long time, and I've seen that happen, where individuals come in and they get thrusted into this, to the limelight and into success. Mm-hmm. And then when the road gets a little rough, they don't know how they got there. They don't know how this house was built.
Right.
Where individuals such as myself, like, I've built this house from the ground up. So if it tumbled down, I ain't got no problem with it. I could build it right back up.
Right.
Because
you've had to.
I've had to.
Right.
Yeah. Nothing was given.
Exactly.
Nothing was given, baby.
That's funny.
So, and that's how, you know, how acting kind of all came about.
Did it change for you being on the soap? Like, all of a sudden, people started recognizing you? Did it? Was it an adjustment?
Sort of, yeah. Right. Yeah, because, I mean, I grew up in Rialto. It's kind of like a small town right. type of thing. And, you know, I was really, and you get thrusting in this acting world, and everybody's just talking about acting stuff, mm-hmm. where I'm not that dude.
Right.
I like to be around real people with real problems. That's like, mm-hmm. like tell me about, you know, what's going on with the kids, life, what's going on with mm-hmm. you personally. Yeah. I don't, the lighting on my headshots, I don't feel like talking about that for 3.5 hours. Like, I don't know. I'm like, that's just not what I want to talk about. you know, so I did move. I lived out here, and I moved to Long Beach.
Okay.
But being on the soap was kind of cut short. I was on there for about a year. Then I got hit by a drunk driver.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I got hit by, I was walking, I was coming outside of my acting class, and I got hit by a BMW Roadster going 65 miles per hour.
What?
Yeah, that's how these scars around my lip, and my right leg was broke, my spine was curved.
Wow.
So I had to, you know, totally rehab my entire life. And, you know, which brings my kind of life motto, as far as nothing is nor positive nor negative, it just
right.
is.
Right.
Being that a lot of people hear that and they're like, oh, this is a negative thing. So stop my, you right. know, stand on Young and the Restless.
Right.
But my outlook on life totally changed. My fearlessness to approach every day like it's my last, right. My connection with God, my just understanding of people. And just opening my eyes to, like, the when you say, when you die and you come back, the trees are greener.
Right,
that is,
right.
They're speaking truth. The sky is bluer. Like, nothing on this earth is, you know, can be, you know, I guess, bad to me. It's just like how you see it, how you want to see it. What's the perspective? So after that happened, I guess my testimony to God is that after my rehab, the first week that I was able to audition, I booked 3 TV shows in 1 week.
Wow.
Yeah. One
had to make a decision which one you was gonna do.
Yeah, it was a thing that it was confirmation. Right. You know, because it was tough. I'm not saying that it wasn't tough on the psyche of it all. Right. I was a person that I was pretty bored my entire life. Mm. Meaning that you touch my face, right, I'm losing my mind. It's a fight. It's a fight. You know, and growing up in the hood, I was the first one.
Right.
I was the first one. They line everybody up. That's Devontae. That's Marquise. Mm-hmm. That's Ihukumeti. That's Allen.
Right.
Oh, we gonna fight Allen.
Right.
Like, hey, we gonna fight Allen. Right. He's the uh-huh, short, light skinned. Uh-huh. So I didn't even fight my entire life. So and when it came about, when, you know, my face was like this, mm, you know, rest in peace, Emmett Till, but my face looked like Emmett Till. Like, I could pull up pictures and you'd be like, wow, what is this? Wow. And I was never upset. Hmm. I was never angry, and that was strange for me. That was strange for me, and I always think about that whenever I kind of get emotional about life, and then right, just kind of think of just that peace that I had during that time was crazy, because my life was, you know, in jeopardy, and I was never angry. Mm-hmm. Never angry at the individual. Yep. Now, like, this is what I'm supposed to go through.
Did you get money from this guy?
Not as much as I should have.
Where my 10%?
It ain't a lot, brother. You buy you some more red vines. That's about, you know, I was young. I did, though, but I was young. It wasn't a lot.
No, oh, because there was a friend of mine who got hit by a Ferrari in Westwood.
Ooh. Oh, no. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he got like a few million dollars.
Wow. Yeah.
And I was like,
That's about the attorney, though.
But, yeah, you know, yeah. But he has brain damage. Like,
No, that's major. That's different.
Yeah. There's like a thing about, I mean, like, he has like a memory issue or something like that, and right, a little bit of like a jitter in his hand. But right, see,
yeah, he deserves that.
I was curious.
He deserves that. Like, mm-hmm, when by the time they called me Wolverine in hospital, because I like healed super quick. Like, yeah, by the time I got to court, I was fine.
He a vampire too.
Yeah. By the time I got to court, the judge was like, "Why are we here?"
Yeah.
Until we had to show him the pictures, and he finally gave me.
And look at my back, and I'm pretty still, but I can't even
hit my girl like I used to.
Right. You know what I mean? I got to take 2 weeks off. I try to pick up. It's a wrap. But yeah, it was tough, man. Like I said, he had brain damage. Like, by the time that happened, it was a lot of different mistakes. I was 21, didn't know what I was doing, and he got away pretty easy.
I think also the guy was a hit and run. Like, the Ferrari took off, but they got it was.
Oh, his car was jammed underneath another car. He couldn't get away. Yeah. But how crazy this dude was! He was so drunk and high, he was smiling in his mugshot.
What?
Yeah, he was gone.
He was gone.
He's like,
I don't know.
He thought he was at the mall or something. He's at Montgomery Ward's or something.
Say cheese.
Yeah, JCPenney's. Texas pictures. I don't know what he was doing.
Yeah, DMV. What is it?
Yeah, yeah. He thought he was getting a license.
Okay. So,
he was gone. But, but yeah, so I've been through some stuff on this journey of acting and just life.
Right.
Definitely.
So you've been in the grind for a while. You've done movies and TV.
Yeah.
Is there one you prefer, or do you hate to even talk? You just want to work.
No, I'm a creator, man. Right. And it's like food to me, man. Right. Sometimes you want Chinese, sometimes you want barbecue, sometimes you want some ribs. Yeah. Like, it's all the same thing. Everything kind of revolves around acting for me. Right. Whether it's writing, whether it's the stuff I do with my kids, kids organization that I have. Mm-hmm. I teach foster kids and at-risk youth. Whether it's my music company, it all revolves around acting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Lisa. I said you dying ass.
Yeah, go ahead, Lisa. Shoot, Lisa. Lisa, she's over there. Double Dutch. She over there. Double Dutch. Little bit.
No, I'm listening.
Little bit. One. Double up. Like, she ready. Come on, Lisa. Hit me one time.
No, I'm just listening until, you know, you were just talking about the accident and stuff, and just talking about the resilience of bouncing back and some of the roles. I mean, you've done a variety of, like, characters and things, and it's just, you know, because I've been following you for a while, and it's like, you know, you're one of those character actors that you see, like, just those people, like, you know, they're just like, they feel like your cousin. I mean, we've never met, but you see people, and you're like, that's when those dudes are going to be around for a while, then that you see them, like, oh, that's like family, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But is there some kind of role that you really want to play? Because I almost feel like, you know, I'm a big sci-fi. Like, I want to see you in something science fiction-y.
I would love that.
Futuristic.
I would love that.
You know, because you have that face. because you know I love faces,
right.
You know, and you have a face that I want to see in a side.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Pretty Ricky and out of space.
Talk about it. Talk about it.
You know, but is there a kind of role that you really want to do, or have had an opportunity to do that has something to do with, like, you know, futuristic type stuff? And
oh man, that, like, something like The Matrix is definitely a dream, because mm-hmm. it's deep. It mm-hmm. has some, you know, philosophical meaning to it.
And you get to fight.
And you get to fight, right, in slow motion.
And look,
you
know? And get nice
in slow motion.
Great.
And I look badass in some leather, you know what I'm talking about? But, you know what I mean? But, yeah, something.
Shiny leather.
Yeah, let me get some shiny leather. Let me rock.
Leather pants.
Let me rock. And the sword. Sword and the machine gun. And, right. and I'm good.
Right.
Now we got a movie. But, yeah, like, for me, it's really... That's not any particular roles that I'm like. I love action comedy. Mm-hmm. I love action comedy. But again, it's like Eden for me, man. I like new challenges. I like new characters. I just like to see. I like to eat. You know what I'm saying? I just like to eat. So just a challenging character mm-hmm. is always what I'm always searching for. I guess the one big role that I would love to do is probably like a Bob Marley biopic.
Yes.
That's something that I would love to do.
You know, Tina Andrews wrote the script for that like 15, 20 years ago.
Oh,
or wow.
They're never
going to make the movie.
They can't get the music script, rights, right?
Yeah, because it's something like...
I heard his wife had it.
No, it's not just that. It's his wife has rights, but it's like, because a guy I know was working on it too for a while. Going to direct it. Universal owns like the international rights, mm-hmm. and Warner Brothers owns the U.S. rights, right. and some bullshit they like beat. That. And it's like, okay, right. so who gets to mm-hmm. control the chunk of the money that comes right. in? You know, like who's gonna put? You know, I mean, you see this shit happen all the time. Like right. people splits rights on who's gonna finance stuff, and they know that. I mean, like now, see, I realized maybe 10 years ago you could like you probably fight on that, mm-hmm. but now because like music has got no value anymore because of the internet, mm-hmm. I don't think they should be fighting over that. You know, right. I mean, think about it. It's not gonna increase record sales. Right. On any of his back catalog the way it would if it came out 10 years ago.
Right.
So now right. it's just like, so what are you fighting over?
I'm surprised they don't do her book, because Rita Marley's biography I love, and I think that's the way to tell the story, okay. because she had a huge impact on his career and a lot of the stuff that I'm fascinated in, because if you haven't read Rita Marley's bio, you should read it, because there's some really amazing, almost like spiritual, mystical things that happen that I think that would be the way to tell the story, and plus I just love Rita Marley, you know. Right. All the stuff she's been through and just holding it down, and
right.
especially with him having all these other kids, and then she's taking care of these kids. Like, women would show up and be like, look, yeah, he ain't coming.
The
and they would drop the kids off drop at the kid. House.
Wow.
And so for years, that I thought Rita wild. Marley.
That was a thing in
for
the 70s.
Years, yeah.
That
was yes.
the comments. What did Ike Turner had the same thing happening, just dropping kids off
yes.
in the 70s.
If you read the book, there's one
that was the thing in the 70s.
It was like they dropped the baby off and okay, well, whatever. And she would just, all the kids get along, and they would just raise up a fam. And to me, that viewpoint of coming in and telling that bar, it's just amazing.
Yeah, that's
well, see, you know? Okay, there was a book that came out, I think, 2 years ago that won the Man Booker Prize in England. It was called A Brief History of Seven Killings, right?
Mm-hmm.
And...
wasn't the writer Marlon?
Like Marlon James. Yeah, Marlon James. So that has something to do with the Bob Marley killing, like the CIA's involved. There's all this conspiracy kind of thing. I mean, that could be a cool... like TV show
to
on
it, right?
You know,
right.
It's like
right.
A way, like a six-parter. Yeah, because it's told from all different point of views.
I feel like it needs to be a miniseries.
It's one of those stories that should be.
I'm looking at you like.
Yeah, I
yeah. Do. When I had my hair, one of his, I don't know which one of the Marleys. I was at some event and they came up to me. He was like, "Yo, you look like you look like Bob.
Can you do a Jamaican accent? That's."
I my thing is that once I do that, like I go into it, I'm obsessed. I haven't even approached it yet because I'm obsessed with stuff like that, right. And then I won't break out
because
of
they
it.
Talk about.
I won't break out of it. Like I know once I go in, it's gonna be a problem.
Because you know Jamaicans, they how to say it in Jamaican because you know.
And I would go to Jamaica. Like, I've heard people.
They don't spit lyrics.
Right.
They be talking.
Right.
They be like, ooh, and I'd be like.
And a lot of actors get it wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And all the Jamaican homeboys be like, this is terrible. Like they can't like they really shit on their accent. Right. And I'll be like, that's not gonna be me. I'm going to Jamaica. Like I'm gonna be there.
You're gonna have to stay with a real family.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm gonna be there for like 6-7 months to be like I wouldn't play with that. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I wouldn't even attempt it right now. I'm like, nah, you ain't gonna play. I'm like, oh, that's some bullshit. Like, nah, I ain't gonna do that.
you know, because like Shane was always shitting on Don Cheadle's accent from the Ocean 11 movies.
Oh, right.
He's like, what the fuck is he doing?
Yeah, like yo, it's serious. Yeah. Like, you know, I mean, it's people like, you know, me being black and Puerto Rican, I hear from the Latin side for Narcos.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, they love the show. The actor is amazing, but all my Colombian homeboys is like, his accent is terrible.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because the guy who plays, he's Brazilian in real life.
Yeah, and he's fantastic. He's a fantastic, he's fantastic.
Right.
But the Colombian is like, we not feeling that.
I know, they be
we not feeling that. You know what I'm saying? And like, yo, that accent is whack.
To this day, I think the nail the accent was Forrest Whitaker in Crying Game. Fucking killed that.
He was great. I mean, no, he killed it in that, and he also killed it in, different accent, but still killed it in, Last King of Scotland. Oh, he was doing fucking Idi Amin. Like he had that down.
Yeah, I think that's as the accent is important as any like wardrobe or what's the makeup what's that prosthetic. Like if they don't look good.
Right.
He throw your whole performance off.
Yeah,
like
nope.
Like nobody wear your hair like that.
Right, right. Like nah. Like so that's why I'm like,
we had Jericho. We had Afro.
We gotta do it.
How'd you get the thing like for being on Blackish? How'd that come about?
Oh wow,
did they just call you up and see you and be like, come on over here, or was it?
Ah shit, I wish shit happened like that. Like yeah,
that's the grind.
Hey, come down. Hey, come down to set real quick, man. We at around 3 o'clock. We got something for you.
Yeah,
he's like nah. Well, Blackish kind of is a bigger story to it all, and just the audition, which I just had to go. I did go in there and audition and had to win the role. But I met Kenya Barish probably like 5-6 years ago, and he's in like Kiko Ellsworth was a pivotal part of my acting. Kenya Barish is a pivotal part of me as a writer.
Right.
Meaning, I did a show with him called The Startup on BET about 5 years ago that he wrote, and we were on set, we were shooting, and everything was going, and I showed him a short film that I wrote.
Yeah.
And I directed, put together, and I gave it to him. Just like, oh, check it out. Not even thinking he was gonna even look at the shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he came back maybe like an hour later. Like, yo, you wrote the shit. He was like, yeah. He's like, how much you spend on this movie, man? It's incredible. I said, man, I spent like $500 on it. He's like, yeah, my belt. It's five. What the fuck is he talking about? I was like, yeah, I spent five. You know, I did it. I had to edit it and all this other stuff. He was like, yo, you should really take your writing, you know, seriously. And I was like, yeah, all right, whatever. And as crazy as it sounds, being in his business, I never considered, you know, us, you know, but as black people, as writers, as naive as you want to call it.
Interesting.
I'll be that. You know what I'm saying?
Because most of your jobs are white people.
Exactly.
Right.
All I saw in my writing mentor, you know, when I was 17, 8 years old, was Michael Caine. He wrote all that, the writer, not the actor.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote all the right movies with Tom Cruise, Jaws, and that's who taught me how to write. But this is a 65-year-old white man running around with a 7-year-old black kid, and everybody looked at us crazy. Right. And we learned how to write and do all this other stuff, and I was under him for years. But I never even considered, because I hear him on the phone, and I'm like, again, this is a 6-year-old white man. I didn't see myself in that position.
Right.
And then meeting Kenyon and having this conversation. While we were shooting, he was in the process of, you know, developing and pitching Blackish. And long story short, 8 months later, Blackish happened.
Right.
And everything, his whole life changed in 8 months. And that just opened my eyes to a whole nother world. I was like, wow, we can be writers.
Right.
We can't be in this position.
Damn, it took you that long.
Hey, man, sometimes I'm quick, sometimes I'm slow. You know what I'm saying?
As long as you rhyme fast.
Come on. Okay. Yeah, then, okay. You know what I'm saying? So that was just an eye-opening moment for me. It's like, wow, we can be this. And then, you know, after the BET show fell through, the role came up for Curtis, and then I went in and did my thing, and that's how I got on Blackish.
Mm-hmm.
But Kenya is a big brother and mentor for me, and has been, you know, kind of showing me the way on the writing side, Because after
do
that,
do you find yourself examining the scripts a little bit differently now that you're looking at it from a writer's point of view?
Hell yeah, hell yeah. But I've always done that. I just didn't know why.
Yeah,
I said the same thing.
I just
didn't know why. Right. It's like you know, a lot of stuff you know, and then you go to school and you're like, oh, that's the name of it.
Right.
like that's the name of it. Like, yeah. I've been in this business for a long time, so a lot of stuff, even from like directing and doing different stuff like that, I'm like, oh, that's what the name of that is.
Right.
I'm like, I've seen people do it and I know what it is.
Yes.
But I just didn't know the name of it.
Right.
And that's what writing was, and that's how it all came about. And then a year and a half later, that's when I got on Survivor's Remorse.
Right. Right.
Luther.
Yeah, that's who put this all. Shout out to Luther Mace, man. He the one put this all together.
Okay.
He was
grinding for a long time.
I've heard. Like, I don't know. I've heard bits and pieces of his story, but I've heard. And, like, I'm talking about everybody from, like, HBO execs. Like, everybody walks up and, like, yo, we love Luther. He's been plugging away. Like, I'm like.
Long time.
And I was, you know, I was my office mate, man. So we did the fourth season? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was there, and I was there to witness his, you know, his first season.
You was there as a writer.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
I don't know why I went blank on that all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So that was your first staff job?
No.
Oh, that wasn't?
Well, no, it is my first staff, but that was my second season.
Oh, you were on the season before.
Because that's what I want to get into now is the writing part of it now. Because the acting part, yes, but let's get into the writing.
Let's talk about some writing. Let's talk about it. I reoccurred on the show season two.
Right.
And me and Mike just really hit it off on set. Like, a lot of stuff I was just doing, you know, give him some new alts and different things like that. And I was just, like, he literally, after we did the first scene, he rewrote this next scene on the way to our next location.
Yeah.
So it went from like a one page scene to like four pages.
Wow.
Just because he was impressed with what I did in the first scene. That's like I said, it's people. I always remember different people in different stages of my life. Like Mike O'Malley.
Mike is great.
He's another person like that, you know, changed my life as far as him giving me the opportunity and seeing something in me that, you know, that nobody else saw.
Right.
So basically, I did two episodes, and I was in doing a table read for Blackish, and Mike sends me a text message. He's like, "Man, you want to write?"
Okay, stop.
I said,
I want to slap you right now. You just got a text.
Right.
Yeah. You want to write something?
You got to write. You got to write, and I'm like, for what? Is it you need a bio done? Or something? What are you talking about? He was like, yeah, you want to write for He just put SR. Like, it wasn't even a long text. It was SR. I looked at it, and this is in the middle of the table read. I'm just kind of like, fuck yeah. I said, fuck yeah back. And then he's like, all right, stars are getting in contact with your team, and we'll work it all out. And we had several conversations, and that's when, you know, he realized who my mentor was and, you know, found out of my writing background. And then that's when I went in and met with the whole team.
Did you have to give him a script or anything, or did you?
No.
That's good.
Bitch, look. Hold your hand out. No.
So that was off of Mike's word.
No.
That was off Mike.
Yes.
Mike said, trust me.
Yeah.
Yes.
If it don't work,
right.
We'll let
him go.
Right.
That's why,
right.
That's why Mike, can't nobody say nothing bad about Mike.
Yeah.
I'll bust somebody up. For my Irish man, don't you say nothing bad about O'Malley.
No, he's...
O'Malley, I'd choke somebody out for O'Malley. You better talk about it.
I met him somewhere. I can't remember where I met him. Just one time, he just was the nicest guy. Like, literally, you know, such a nice guy.
No, he's incredible family man. And I think that's where we really kicked off, because I'm a big person about family and take care of my family. But I've been writing since I was 17, and like writing, I got scripts out there that don't have my name on it. You know what I'm saying? They have my name on it. That's, you know, I had to pay my dues with, you know, my mentor. Like, I remember waking up at 7 o'clock in the morning, sitting at his dusty table.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to my man Michael K. MK, the killer. You know, that's my guy. And like 7 a.m. to pretty much 9 p.m. sitting at this table just going at it. Like, 17-year-olds, like, you know, on a Friday night when I should be out partying, I'm with this man, and we in there just writing. I'm like, you know, going to sleep. And he was paying me, you know, crumbs and McGriddles. You know what, you know what I'm saying? So it's one of those things I always tell people. Like, I think Denzel said it. Everybody said it. You know, luck is when opportunity meets preparation, meets a great attitude. And that's what the situation with, like, Mike hit. Like, and one thing that he always, he was like, one of the reasons why I'm bringing you in here is because you have a great energy. You have a great, you make everybody around you, you know, have a good time, and you bring a positive energy. And, you know, anybody who's been in the writer's room knows that it get tough in there. It get tough. And if you don't have a positive outlook on anything, it could get ugly. It get ugly. So, and that's how my opportunity came about. And then from there, like, now I got, you know, shows I won't, you know, name that was happening, but I got some big companies that's producing some of my pilots. I'm writing with some writers.
In the guild, little bastard.
Right. You said what?
You're in the guild. In the guild,
yeah. I'm in the WG.
You gotta come join the committee, damn it.
I'm in the gang. I'm in the writers gang. And then, I've been, it's one of those things that just like with everything in my life is that I come from nothing. I come from a single mother that's, you know, took care of three kids. You know, we was broke and I didn't know until I was 17. But I've taken every opportunity and expanded on it. That's my thing. I don't see, I see everything as opportunity should be create more opportunity. So whatever, like I said, from the me reoccurring on Survivor's Remorse, I created this. And then from that, I always look at my mentors and my people that have, you know, help me out, and you know, in this world that I've never haven't got a lot of, that I'm always in a position to make them proud. Like, I can't wait to, you know, do things where Mike is like, oh wow, like I want to make these individuals proud by taking a shot on this, you know, this kid from the projects. You know what I'm saying? I want them to be like, oh, see, this is why. This is why. And you know, and that's my goal. And that's why I wake up every day 7 o'clock in the morning and go to 2 o'clock in the morning every day.
That's the grind.
Every day. So it's one of those things where I never sit on any opportunity. I expand every. That's how I built my entire career. You know, from doing movies with Denzel to Jennifer Aniston to Sir Ben Kingsley. These have been things.
It's you gotta like, call him Sir Ben.
Okay.
Like I've had this big, you know, theatrical agency or anything. It's just been being on set, building relationships with these people, doing great work, and that being the rumor. Like, this guy, he does great work. He comes and does his job. He's just phenomenal professional all the time and all that stuff. So
I was just watching, I don't know if we were just talking about it the other day, and I was watching Unsung with Ice-T. But they have the Unsung, like with this music, they have the Unsung Hollywood, which is all about him as an actor and being, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
They were talking about how, is it Dick Wolf who does Law and Order?
Right.
Yeah. He was talking, because they were interviewing him, and he was talking about how what he loved about him, he said he'd have other actors come on the show, and they'd bring their entourage. He would come by himself, off book, know his shit, and be prepared and light and funny and all that shit, and do his work and go back to his trailer and do whatever. He was like, this dude's so easy to work. Why do you think he's been there for 17 years? You know what I mean?
That's what
he
people
just showed
don't,
up, did his thing, no entourage, no
that's
bullshit.
What people don't realize, no, man. People, that's what people don't realize, man. And when you do these productions, you're shooting with individuals. Like, just let's say Blackest, for instance. We're on there. I call it a school season, a school year. Because you're on there from, you know, fall to spring. So imagine being, you know, spending most of your time with these individuals away from your family. You're spending more time with these people, your coworkers, and your family. And if these individuals have bad energy and negativity, like, that makes your season or film, because you're shooting films with sometimes from between a month to 3 months. And if you got these bad apples, like, this just makes it tough. So if I'm going to go through this war with somebody, at least I want to, I'd rather pick somebody that has great energy and that's not, may not be the best actor in the world. Rather than the best actor, and it's this problem, you know, and I think that's something that that's definitely goes with my name, as far as like I just come in, I do my work, and and I give you more than what you expect, and that's always what I do.
Well, you know, you never want to be on anyone's life is too short list.
That is very true.
You just don't.
Don't be that person. I mean, life is too short list.
And if you get on that list, then that's, you know, you're never gonna get recommended for anything, but conversely, there's those people, like you said, the great energy list, you know, who's on that, and you remember everybody who you worked with, you know, who made the process easier. Right. Because it's never, it's not like these other jobs that are potentially as stressful, like a doctor or an attorney or some shit like that, because there's kind of like, it's like the emotional component of doing what we do,
mm-hmm,
makes experiences have a greater resonance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if I just work with you as an attorney and you're just an asshole, I was like, okay, whatever, I don't see you, but because right, we work on the case. But if you were an asshole on my film set or on my mm-hmm TV shoot or in my writer's room, mm-hmm, then it's like you just made everything, like you magnified. You,
exactly. You exactly. You magnified an already, yeah, an already, you know, emotional, yeah, bubble. So
you magnified it. Yeah. You know, and I was like, ah, hit me again.
Yeah. And you're dealing with a whole crew of emotional people. like in the writer's room, we're all emotional. We all got issues. Totally. Like, we all got issues. We all got stuff going through. So, you know, as an actor, and same egos thing. Yeah, egos, you know, and I mean, all of these different things, man. So that's something that I always tell actors up and coming, like, you know, build your equity. Right. Build your equity as far as being someone that's, you know, on time, has a great, you know, great time, has great energy, and always does more than what's expected.
Right.
And then just consider this, is for us as black people, we gotta be. We can't make the same mistakes.
How many times have we had this conversation?
No, see, you know what? I say this all the time. It's like, you know, where when we were at the Writers Guild the other night, the thing, this, mm-hmm, your assistant was wearing that T-shirt with the different, you know, like black, the different
black women,
the black writers, directors,
right.
And I noticed that Casey Lemon was on there, you know, mm-hmm, and I was talking to this guy. I said, what happened to her after he was by you? And he was like, well, Caveman's Valentine. And I was like, yeah, but that shouldn't have like harmed her career,
right,
to that extent. Because, yeah, I was just talking to my brother Alex the other day. We, mm-hmm, were talking about, you know, like Blade Runner, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, and he's like, what happened? What happened? And I was like, if you remember, that movie flopped.
Yes.
And
then, huge flop. Became a cult classic.
That movie flopped, and then Legend flopped, and then the next movie flopped. He had like three flops in a row. And then he finally did something with the women, Thelma and Louise.
Oh, right.
And that brought his career, yeah, back. But if you're black, you're not going to get three flops, yeah, in a row.
No.
On anything. Yeah.
But I this is what I, and
I'll, you can flop upwards.
That's the thing. Like, and that's very true. And like that, it all I was just talking to my team the other day. I, mm-hmm, said people only care about winners.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I mean, it's been a lot of people that's done a lot of heinous things, and people, yeah, forget.
Yeah.
As soon as they win.
True.
And that's everybody. Trump? That's you know, like, you just gotta. That's always your position. And the thing is that you can't, you know, always hear that. And I'm always, well, you know, you just got to keep going.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can't let anybody, you know, dictate. And the way technology is now to make a film is not like, you know, you have to break the bank to make, right, a film nowadays. Right. So, you know, we're in a position now where we can create our own. We can, you know, with writers such as everyone at this table, mm-hmm, with filmmakers, with technology, mm-hmm, all those other things. It's, you know, it's about time that we take control of our own destiny, right, and not allow, like, oh, these flops. Like, oh, we can't. Well, they won't allow us. So then go out and make it your own.
Right. Mm-hmm. And this is what we're talking
like,
about.
Go out and make, yeah, your own.
This, you is, this, is why, yeah, like, this is why it's so important to me to hear that you've actually progressed from the actor to the writer to, mm-hmm, the producer to the director. I mean, you're doing all those things that you have to do. You can no longer just be an actor anymore.
No.
You can no longer just be a writer. You, no, know what I mean? You have to be several hyphens,
yeah,
in order to succeed.
Yeah.
You know, and there's, I swear to God, I don't even send you half the emails we get. We get so many emails from people all over the world. How can I do this? Oh, there's nobody here doing it. But I'm like, do you got a camera?
Right.
You know what I mean? Do you have a story? Look, do you have a camera? Do you know somebody with a camera?
So there's a movie that's coming out. It's called The Florida Project.
Okay.
Sean Baker directs his latest film. But his previous film was Tangerine.
Oh, yeah, right.
Which, yeah, was shot on an iPhone.
He just got iPhone, like, 5. You
know, iPhone 5. He just got that thing called Filmmaker app.
The Florida Project is about the little girl that lives in the...
I mean, those iPhones, they go 4K now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They go 4K.
And it's just like, okay, you know, I was watching the little thing on it this morning, and I was like, and they were showing Tangerine as the cuts to it, and it's like, yeah, it looks really good.
Right.
So there's, you know, the excuses about it, like you're saying, right, whatever it is,
you know, the tech is too, it's all available to
them. And let's say it like this. A good story is a good story. Yes. And people will get over how it visually looks.
Oh, yeah. There's plenty of movies that don't look great, but the stories.
That's this thing. Francis Coppola used to say that all the time. He was like, if your movie works, people don't notice the flaws.
Exactly.
Right. If it doesn't work, they notice every fucking
everything.
Thing.
Everything.
Right. As long as your sound is straight. And your story's all right. I'm there. I saw the boom mic, but you know what?
But I'm cool.
I'm still on it. Okay?
It's all right. It's all right.
But when the sound goes bad, you're like, all right, stop the presses.
It's like, yeah. You can't do it. It's got to be synced.
Yeah.
You can't be looking like a comic.
So, what, in terms of your right now is like a project that you want to write? Like, I know you're doing so many different things, but in terms of a future writing thing, what is something, a story that you want to write that you're looking forward to?
Wow.
Doing,
you know, and then it may sound crazy. It's I'm doing all of those things. Like, I have an app called Everybody Digital. It's the first short film app. Where we launch October 3rd.
That's your hat you wearing.
Yes.
Yeah. We launch We launch October 3rd,
and how does
we'll
it work?
We're basically a short form version of Netflix.
Really?
Where we have a large catalog of short films that we'll have, and let's get it over there, man. I want to create something that will gain more eyeballs for short films,
right?
And also change the industry as far as short films, being that everything else has evolved. Music videos, feature films, television, even Instagram videos. Right. There's an industry. There's $1 billion in it.
Right.
Short films is just, you basically take that money and throw it in the fire.
True. Just we got in 6 festivals.
Right.
We're good.
And then the window is short.
Right.
You go from 12 to 15 months.
Right.
Then after that, there's nothing. There's no further distribution. There's no further way to expose your films to the average consumer, being that the short films, people that go are usually a part of production, family and friends, and are in the industry, so to speak.
Right.
But the average person that goes to AMC or watches Empire don't even know these film festivals exist.
Right.
So I want to create a platform to be able to utilize and target those that demographic. Long story short, we're producing a short film every month. We're doing a series every other month.
Okay.
So a lot of the ideas, a lot of the things that I'm writing, we're writing it, baby. We're doing it. Like, that's the thing. That's why I always, you know, I tell people all the time, just do it.
Right.
Just do it. Don't wait for anybody. Just figure it out, you know?
Dude and his brother are badass directors. Dude,
oh, really?
I'm telling you.
Well, we need them.
All right,
we need them. Just because the content is important to me as a writer and as someone that thinks short films have been overlooked.
Yeah, overlooked.
We're the grandfather to these Instagrams and all these other things. These short forms.
And to piggyback off of that, everybody in film school had to make a short film.
Yeah, exactly.
See, what's interesting about short films is that it's never really been a form that has been outside of, like, I'm doing this to try to get my feature over here.
The last
10, 20 years. Right. But I used to always notice, you know, in Europe, there's more of a, like a, it's kind of like a culture, like we're talking about, there's a culture for it, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, because this guy, you know, he's dead now, but he's a Polish director named Krzysztof Kieślowski. And he made these two short films I thought were just amazing. He's got a short film about killing and a short film about love. Hmm. And I just was like, this is fucking fascinating. You know, they're like, they're maybe like 30 minutes long or something like that. But so they fall in this weird kind of pace where it's not a feature and it's not like some little 5-minute thing. Mm-hmm. But he told a story that wouldn't work in another format.
Like, yeah.
You know? And I think this was interesting now with like a lot of things with television, with these kind of short order and miniseries is, there's like stories that don't work as movies, and there's stories that don't work as series, and there's stories that don't work as features but could work as a short, you know. Right. And that's kind of, it's cool that you're doing that, because
there's
a lot of stuff that you know the thing I sent you, the No Wind on the Horizon, like I sent that to Linnell, and she was like, you should make a short form out of this,
right?
And I was like, but what am I gonna do with it, you know?
Right.
So
and that's
and
what
you're
a lot
creating
of
the space.
Yeah, I'm creating a space where it's, you know, it's we're celebrating short films and mm-hmm. we're broadening the audience in the way it's infrastructure in the next 2 years, I believe, we'll be able to create industry and we'll be able to make money from short films.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the overall plan, is to create this industry for short right. films where we're going to be creating our own stars, we're going to be creating our own celebrities, whether they're directors, producers, actors. Right. This is what our whole overall plan is. Just like, again, like Divine's, just like all these other, there's Hype Williams and all yep. these
right.
director
right.
X that are celebrities from right. their genre.
Right.
You know, so that's the goal with Everybody Digital, is to be able to create these stars within our genres, short films. Just because there are stories that are best, you know, told in short form version. Yeah. And overall, the, you know, attention span of people is getting shorter and shorter and shorter.
Right.
And, you know, just satisfying the consumer.
Totally.
Being that, you know, we spend more time on our phones than we watch TV.
Yeah.
Where people are, you know, digesting these bite-sized, you know, vignettes mm-hmm. at a high rate. Why not give them something? Why not just give them something that's a great story, high quality, visually stimulating, aside from just people just doing it on their phone,
right?
You know, just taking it to another level, and that's what we're doing. And that's as far as on the writing side. Like, I'm rewriting all every any idea that I have. Like, okay, it's getting out there. We pushing it out. And again, back to like my mentors, like I've learned from the Kenya Barris's and the Mike O'Malley's, and I'm trying to just stand on their shoulders and like, how can I take it further?
Right.
How can I, you know, be able to create? Yeah, I want to create an industry.
Yeah. but that takes yes. you back to your, you said when I was a kid, you were 3 years old.
3 years old.
Right.
Call mom, talking
like,
about,
yo.
I created something, right. and I've done this thing, and yeah. You owe me.
Right, right. Yeah, I need my $3, man.
My rate is this.
Yes, my $3.
So you basically come full circle, basically. Like,
yeah.
I'm creating this thing, and right. hey, you know, yeah. I think it's awesome, especially
and
for
you're
those,
giving back.
Yes.
Especially those people, like you said, the people who may email us and have questions around the world. Because
right.
there's a lot of great storytellers out there who don't have that infrastructure or don't right. have an example of what they can do.
Right.
And by you providing this platform, they can go and check out online or whatever. It's just going to make better stories.
And
for
a lot
everybody.
Of times, for the short film makers, like, they don't know the business side of it, so
right.
they put all their money in the film
right.
and have nothing for marketing.
Right. right.
So it's a lot of great films that's even on YouTube that
right.
have like 12 views
right.
that exactly. just nobody knows
yes.
know about. And then
yes.
And in creating this platform, I want to have something that's prestigious and something that's beautiful, something that is special
yeah.
that people can go to one place
yeah.
and know what they're getting. You know, you can't, when you go to Walmart, you're getting everything, but if you go to Louis Vuitton,
right.
you feel some type of way.
Yeah. Right.
it's like that with YouTube.
And it might be ugly.
It might be ugly, but you,
but
I got
but
the
Louis.
I'm feeling good. So that's what we try to provide for our short filmmakers, is that, like, yeah, we got Louis over here
right.
too. You know what I'm saying? We got some nice exclusive yeah. stuff over
right.
here.
Right.
So, I mean, then all the filmmakers out there, all they have to do is go to everybodydigital.com and submit
okay.
the film.
Cool.
Now,
check that out, people. And it launches.
We launched October 3rd, but they can submit. We've been
okay.
taking submissions since earlier last
okay.
year.
Okay.
And it is being curated, so not everyone will be. I guess, like I said, we want
Good.
The creme de la creme.
Good.
Yeah, it's going to be vetted.
We want to definitely represent short films
right.
in a great way that we, again, change the mindsets of individuals on how short films have been perceived for
right.
the past, what, 50 years?
Right.
so yeah.
It'll save me those people who go to those film festivals who love watching a short film fest,
right.
but sometimes you don't know what you're going to get. And I feel like I'm held hostage sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
But if I can go to a source where it's going to be short films like that have been vetted, like
right.
this is what I love short films.
And a lot of times they put them in those blocks.
Yes.
So you got to watch a terrible one
yes.
to get to the good one.
But you know what? That's something that I learned when we were doing Architects about
right.
the blocks. It's that, you know, when we were in the LA Shorts Fest and
mm-hmm.
we were in that one that was like on the prime night at the prime
right.
time.
Yeah.
You know, like there was like 9 shorts with ours
mm-hmm.
and they were all fucking good.
Yeah.
But then when we did the other one, the Action on a Film one, it
mm-hmm.
was like in the afternoon, early,
right.
and it was like, and they were like 2 good ones.
Right.
And I was
right.
like, so it was kind of like, okay, so, I mean, if you go to the film festival, you know,
right.
you need to go to the block where there's like some marquee film playing.
Oh yeah,
for sure. Because if not, you're gonna be mad.
Because people at the film festival are disrespectful, man. Like they will walk up and get out in the middle of your. like it ain't no. Yeah, they be like, you know what? I can't do this.
Hence why
shit.
I tend to stay in the back.
Right.
So
right.
I can
right,
discreetly
right.
not hurt nobody's feelings.
Right. Like I'm gonna walk right out of this one.
And I need to tip.
Let me ask you one quick question in regard to your company.
Yeah.
So you're saying you guys are making a film a month?
Yeah.
Are you guys looking for scripts? Like what's going on?
Are you just
making your own? Like what do you guys
I guess what's the best way?
Hitting this.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The best way to do it is how the best way to say it. I don't want people just sending scripts.
Right.
I don't know if he was sending scripts.
Motherfucker.
Just don't do that.
You need
just
a release, bitch.
Just don't do... I definitely like to meet the individual. Again, I'm a big energy and family type of person right. where it's bigger than business right. for me. You know what I'm saying? And when it comes to creating the originals, it's very, very well handpicked, being that... like I said, it's one of those things where I would love to meet with everybody. I love to meet people. Okay. So if you have something which we could try to set something up, and we could see how it goes. A lot of the stuff that we're doing has been through referrals.
Right.
Just because, I mean, let's put it out there. This is legal reasons. Oh, I don't want people sending a bunch of scripts and then we shoot something and then people are like, oh, that's our script. Like, no. Right. Like, that's one of the reasons why I'm like, no. I don't want people sending mad scripts.
Y'all hear
and
then, it. And don't be sending them to me.
Look right, on the website. Right. Read just the rules and guidelines.
It's a legal thing. Right. It's a legal thing. Right. Let me do the best
way. Interesting. There was some weird case the other day where somebody, there was someone who was like tweeting story ideas to a celebrity.
Really? I seen it was a talk show. It was a talk show where they like took the exact jokes from the Twitter and was putting them in the thing.
Yeah,
but then he couldn't do nothing because it's a public forum.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah,
it's a public forum.
He lost out. Like the court said, you lose.
yeah, it's a public forum. It's a public forum.
Don't ever be a judge. Right. The way you said that's so cold.
Right.
You
off
lose.
With his head.
You shall eat cake.
Yeah, so definitely. So, I mean, it's been one of the definitely referrals and like we're dealing with, it's not even a sound like that, like dealing with this, the different agencies and stuff like that. Just legal-wise. Right. Legal-wise, we have to do things in a proper way. Like this is like again we're the short form version of Netflix and that's kind of our company motto and that's how we kind of have to keep
I'm
it.
I'm surprised Netflix doesn't do short films.
They have a couple of short films.
Like a couple
of
award winning ones.
Yeah, they have a couple of SNS.
But it's not like a segment at all. Yeah, right, so I think you guys are coming to the right point.
It's just one of those things where I feel that just like at a restaurant, man, you go to McDonald's and they put, you know, lobster on the menu. You're not going to want that. I'm used to eating this way.
Yeah, it's like
I'm used to eating it this way.
McDonald's lobster
is
suspect.
This is what I'm used to. This is what I'm used to coming to get. So, you know, Netflix has built their company model in a certain form and they you know, and the consumer is digesting things in a certain way. So even if they try to do something like that, I don't think it would be received the same way just because people are, I'm going to McDonald's for the Big Mac.
Right.
Yes. All of a sudden, you throw a Whopper on there. I'm like, man, come on.
I'm just curious why they never did it because I think that people look at Netflix now to do, contrary to what you said, not that it's discounting it, but it's contrary, is that for people want to absorb 8-10 hours of content and anything that's not that is, you know, is not really their thing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, people love to binge watch. People love what, you know.
Yes.
You know what Netflix is built. Like I said, we following right their company motto, man. They just basically did what HBO did.
I want to go off topic just for a second, but this is interesting. That I was reading someone who was suggesting this about the Emmys with the reason why Netflix didn't really get any Emmy nods is because this guy was suggesting that because they drop everything at once. That it's kind of like a movie it's like the media campaign goes until the day that it drops and then they on to the next thing.
That's right, because it looked Stranger Things was going to just take it, didn't
you know,
it?
But then they were saying look at HBO with Big Fat with like mm-hmm. with like with Big Pretty Li- what is it like
Pretty
Big
Lies.
Yeah Pretty Little Lies. It was 7 weeks of constant hearing about it, constant hearing about it, constant hearing about it, and that kind of like it kept it in people's heads more, you know.
Interesting.
Because I thought too that Stranger Things was going to take, but then I was like, I haven't heard anything about it.
I guess my question is that I don't. Do you think Netflix really cares?
I think they do now.
That they didn't get to, because they've won. They've won. They've won several. Like, I'm just
curious. They have, because the people over at HBO were saying to me one time, the biggest thing that we like look forward to when deciding on a show is, do we think it's gonna if it's gonna like move the needle culturally.
Right.
Like, are people going to talk about it?
Right.
And people will talk about your thing if it wins Emmys.
Right.
So that's why I think that people do anything. I think that's why Netflix is trying to figure out their model differently now.
I think it helps to be nominated.
It helps.
Yeah, sure.
I think it helps. You know, I think their bottom line isn't affected from it, right, though.
Right. No, no.
Like, that's what my question derived from. Like, I think their bottom line, Netflix, right, is they're a machine, boy.
Now they got Shonda.
Yeah, they got shit. Yeah,
they got Ryan Murphy.
They got,
and they got your boy who did
That's what I'm saying. Netflix ain't going nowhere.
Yeah.
Netflix is unbothered right now.
Unbothered.
I just find it curious, because I mean, yeah, from strictly like business point of view, you know, they're doing the most, but it's just always interesting conversation when people talk about like what's their motivation to try to win. You know, these industry accolades,
right.
You know, because at a certain point, I think that drives a lot of shit that gets made. People are like, is it the new Marvel movie,
right,
or is it gonna get the actors to fucking be to win an award?
Right.
And I mean, I think that's the only decision that people like really are into now with a lot of shit. So.
Right. I think differently. Just because the Marvel movie, they gonna make $1 billion off of it, and it's I always this is my thing, and I got to head out.
Never.
This is always my thing. Where as crazy as it sounds, this business is a business,
right,
meaning that's all about the bottom line.
Yeah.
It's ran by investors,
right,
being that they don't, half of the investors don't even see what they invest in. They only care about their Monday return.
Right.
So if I have $40 million, and this is what I tell all of my actors, I said, this is a business. You present yourself as a business, then you'll get, you'll start seeing change in your career. Being that if I have $40 million as an investor, even if whoever, the actor that I'm talking to is $40 million, I need my $40 million back.
I could think
you're right, a fantastic person.
Yes. Right.
Think you're great. You're the best actor I've ever seen in my life.
But my paper.
And then this, your last movie did $2.
Right.
Now this person that I care less about, you know, I've never seen his work. I heard he's an asshole.
Right.
But his last movie did $200 million.
Right.
I'm gonna go with this guy.
Right.
You know, because the investors aren't on set, so they don't care who's an asshole on set.
Right.
They don't care who,
right,
who's a bad apple.
Right.
You know. So that right there is what drives the industry. Is the business of it?
No. I mean, that's the whole point I'm saying about the Marvel movie. Like, people either want that big movie,
right?
I think that's gonna churn them all the money they can. It's gonna give them their 4x on their investment,
right?
Or they're gonna say, well, I want to get, you know, like Daniel Day-Lewis out of retirement. So what's the project that does that? I think those are the two motivators. And anything else, people are not really like concerned about.
And from the investor's position, I always think it's all about the money. Now the producers and everybody else will be in there, but like, oh, we want to do this. Like, we just get creative. Cool. I just need my money back.
No, exactly.
Cool.
Right.
I say, cool. You can get whoever.
Right. I want my money.
Exactly right.
I want my money back, and that's where
2 years.
That's where you're right, and that's where a lot of artists get their heart broke, is because like, oh man, people don't want the art, and I'm like, yo, you got to think it from an investment. Right. If you had $40 million that you was gambling,
right?
Because that's what this game is. This is high stake poker we're playing. This is high stake poker. Everything, we can have the greatest idea, have the greatest actors line up, and then next thing you know, he go shoot somebody in the face. something crazy happens, yeah, and then whatever your masterpiece won't see the light of day because of what happens socially.
Well, I mean, look, the art has got almost nothing to do with it. It's the thing that I say on the podcast all the time, and I tell writers all the time, your idea is not to sell your script or to do anything like that. Your idea is to convince someone that I need to give you $70 million to make this TV series.
Yeah.
Your script has to be that good. Right. Or the script has to be good enough to say, let's give you $200 million for the movie. That's the damn whole shifter. It's nothing about the art. I mean, the fact that there is artistic stuff in this business is just... is
is a whole other conversation.
Yeah. Right. No.
It's all about and if people are going to invest $70 million in your idea, it's because they know they're going to make $700 million.
Yeah. So right. I always tell the artists, like, how are you approaching it from a business perspective to make these investors comfortable enough to invest this money and feel I just want to feel like I'm gonna get my money back.
They usually don't.
But just let me feel that one. Just give me something that feel that way.
But that's the gamble you're talking about. Is that they quantify it enough to say, if I roll black, I'm gonna get a lot of money.
Right.
I could roll red, but I'm okay with that because if I do hit black, I'm gonna be sitting pretty. Right. And that kind of that risk valuation is what, you know, makes a lot of decisions.
And there's two different, like I said, there's two different people in this business where the investors I meet and I've spoken to several people in that position, they can care less about awards. They want their money back. Then there's the other group where it's like, I want awards.
Right. Yeah.
See, but a lot of times they're not the investors. They're the producers. Right. They're like, oh, we want these awards.
They're trying to get,
but that's the equal medium, and that's what makes this business as special as it is, and that's what, how we get the art is because of these two groups, and that's where the fight. Anybody that's been in the writer's room, anybody that's been in the film, know that they're always fighting against the money.
Right.
They're always fighting. Like, oh, we really need this for this. Like, you better make it stretch.
I don't see how that's gonna benefit the bottom line.
Exactly. That's the battle, and that's, you know, the industry that we in, man. And it's that's what makes, you know, magic.
Alan, thank you, Alan.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Repping the Boricua.
Yeah, Boricua, baby, Boricua. Yeah. All day.
Black
All
Latinos.
Day, that's
thank
right.
you. I mean, we expect more good things. I'm so happy about this platform you're creating thank for all the you. Artists. Thank so people, you. Please make sure you check it out. Check them out when you see them
everybody
on TV.
Digital.
Yes. Yeah, everybody digital.
Everybody digital. Just thank you for spending your Sunday with us and no just giving problem. Us a lot of game.
No problem, man. Hey,
you on Twitter?
I'm on Instagram. Instagram is Maldonado is everywhere. The challenge is everybody to figure out how to spell my last name. And then Twitter is AM is everywhere.
AM.
Everywhere.
Where you at, Chris?
I'm an unauthorized CBD on Twitter and Instagram.
Where?
And at shadowboxercinema.net.
Okay, cool. Lisa Colt.
You know I'm on Twitter. What fresh hell is this? You know, the Black Mermaid. So when you see what fresh hell is this, look for the Black Mermaid avatar.
Really on it, too.
It me. Check out the new book that I'm in. It's called Luminescent Threads, Connections to Octavia Butler. So if you're into science fiction and environmentalism, social justice, and just the impact that Octavia Butler has made, I have a piece in there that talks about my connection to her. Mm-hmm. Shout out to everybody, Geek Sober, all the people on Saturday Night Sci-Fi, and then all the people who are watching great TV and making pulp culture and fandom amazing.
What's up? And I'm your host, Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter at Hilliard Guest. You guys can follow the show, Screenwriters RR, on Twitter. Any questions, screenwritersrantroom@gmail.com. Please go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review. We need that for the metrics. That's about it. Bunch of shit going on. Looks like Sylvester's coming back. I'll tell you about that later.
Yes.
Whole another producer now.
Here we go. Yeah.
Anyway,
the hustle
good
continues.
Shit. Yes. So anyway, hope you guys have a great week. Thank you again, Alan. We appreciate having
you,
buddy.
Thank you, guys.
You're awesome.
Thank you, man.
Keep doing
thank
great
you.
Shit.
Hey,
you know what I mean?
Keep building.
And Chris and I are going to send you some shit.
Yeah, definitely. Let's
sure,
do it.
For sure.
Let's do it.
So everybody join with me for Wakanda.
Yes. Try to figure out something Wakanda. New.
That shit is hilarious.
Everyone steals our tagline. It's all right.
So y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. On the show, we keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what, everybody?
Wakanda.
Peace, y'all. Wakanda. Keeping it Wakanda on y'all.
I'm going to say what I feel. And I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Rant Room. You wanna
be a rider. Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the rent room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. Welcome to the Red Room.